Hello and welcome to another episode of At Random. My name is Rick Timmis.
I'm Jackson Matthews.
And I'm John Wordsworth.
So, we really ought to bring our listeners up to date with a new format that we're putting forward. We've done 10 shows in the standard format, and we're going to put things together and jazz things up, make things a little bit different, and we hope that it's going to be a little bit more interesting. John, do you want to talk about the structure?
Yeah. So, where previously, we've kind of had this show almost like a radio show that you might listen to while driving home. We thought really what we'd like to do is get into the proper guts of some of the issues that we talk about. And we often find ourselves running out of time, running a bit short and not being able to go quite as deep as we hoped. So what we're going to aim to do from now is actually take just one main topic per show and then go as far into that as we can before we get scared, run away and stop recording.
Now, we're going to support that with each show by adding some additional supporting material onto the website. So at random.org, we're going to start putting some more extensive and detailed show notes so that when you come to the site and you're looking through the different podcasts that we've got available, you'll be able to see the topic and you can also look at some of the bullet points, etc., in the show notes to see what it's about and see what interests you. And we hope that you'll be able to pick from the topics. And we're also looking really to develop the community, and we want to use things like social media and stuff like that. And Jack, well, we're going to get something going with Twitter. That's the plan, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. We're going to have a more consistent assault on Twitter, if you're into that sort of thing. And basically hope to have you engaging with us a bit more and send us angry emails. Angry emails are the best, actually, because we get to rip the piss out of them. So please send us as angry emails as you like.
So you can send those into show@random.org. Remember to follow the podcast on Twitter, which is @@randompodcast. That's the Twitter name. And do get in touch with us. Let us know your ideas. So, John, do you want to take us on to this show, what we're going to cover this time for the new format?
Yeah. So the first topic I'd like to bring to the table for this new structure of show is to have a good proper look at the new Windows 8 developer preview.
Yay!
Now,
this is going to be a proper, fair, balanced. This is going to be a balanced look at Windows 8.
Balanced, because Jack will probably like it because it's Windows and Rick won't. So it's balanced and I'll be in the middle. So.
I'm the Windows fan.
Yeah.
I'm not a Windows fan, am I?
You are now.
For the sake of fairness. Oh, I can take Windows side in this. I can do that.
So I've got Windows 8 set up on a 120 gig partition on my second hard drive in my quad-core Q6600 with 3 gigs of RAM. So that's what we're running it on. It's running native. We had a bit of a play with it in VirtualBox, and you can't really evaluate it when it's running in a virtual box because most of the Metro apps don't work.
Well, it met with my expectations. We loaded into VirtualBox, it didn't work. I told you it wouldn't work when we started, and indeed nothing worked, which didn't surprise me. It was like every other release of Windows.
I was pretty happy, really.
It was
all we needed to make a snap decision. But if we got to come back, all right.
So I've run it through the install, and it's been on there for a little while, but there have been updates. So that kind of surprised me. I thought they were just going to throw a preview out and leave it. But it's installed some updates since then. I had to install a Wi-Fi driver, but then I had to install that on Windows 7. So I assume they haven't changed the drivers since Windows 7 yet. The default package of drivers is presumably just the one from Windows 7. And so that's where we are. So it's been set up. I haven't done anything with it really, other than get it going and get the Wi-Fi on there. And so this is what you will see when you first come back to your Windows 8 PC, I guess.
So is it logged in at the moment or anything like that?
It's just, so this is literally when you just turned it on.
Is this like the screensaver then?
Yeah, I guess so. This is like I just literally turned it on. So this is the first thing you see.
Right.
When your PC turns on, but it's very similar to the lock screen. I don't know if it's because maybe it's been sitting there turned on for 10 minutes. Maybe it then went to the lock screen, but it doesn't log in automatically. So
it's kind of nice. It looks like a screensaver, doesn't it? Because it's got the background there and a big ass clock in the corner. Oh, there it goes.
So you kind of drag it away to get rid of it. Like, you only have to drag it a small amount. So there's more updates that need installing, just like Windows.
Yeah. Welcome back.
Yeah, okay.
So obviously first we're struck by this kind of bright green blocky, and I don't mean to sound detrimental, bright green and square interface.
It's very Spartan, isn't it? And that's not an unkind thing to say.
Hmm.
It's so minimalist. It reminds me of those old kids' TV programmes on the BBC, like old stuff like Play School and things like that, like the title cards.
Yeah, yeah.
Really, like a real pastel colours, it's really not out to offend you, is it?
This matches up with what they've been doing on the Windows 7 mobile phones. You know, that, and obviously I think most people are comfortable now with the term Metro UI.
Is that what this is, Metro?
Yeah.
I mean, my take on it, I was just looking at it then and thinking, well, it's, you know, it's green colour for a start, which is quite a different change. And but the login screen, it just made me think of those mandatory fire exit signs that you get around buildings.
Yeah.
You know, like the green with the white man running through the door.
Yeah, yeah.
It just made me think of that. It looks really like that. That kind of, you know, like
stark.
Yes. Yeah. Quite stark and very. What's the word I'm looking for? Kind of just so deliberately simple.
Functional.
I think that's what they're trying to say. You know, it says one thing, doesn't it? You know, this way out, exit front. That's not what I'm saying. Exit sign. I'm going to bash it. Don't worry,
it's coming.
But I'm not bashing it at this point. So early. That would just be silly.
The kind of thing you'd find on an exit sign or a public toilet sign, or
yeah, exactly. Yeah, it is. It does look like that. Yeah, definitely. So
when you log in, this is what you're first hit with. This is kind of the new Metro homepage, I guess. And it's got the, obviously you can check out the pictures if you want to have a look at the show notes online. But essentially, you've got your stark green background with a little bit of texture put in. The word start at the top, your user profile, top right, that's quite interesting to have always there, telling you who you are. But that's modelled off the Xbox in case you forget who you are, I guess. And then you've got these kind of tiles, and the tiles are, they're so clearly laid out in a tablet type fashion.
Mm-hmm.
So here's screen one with a little bit of screen two on the side, and if you scroll down on the mouse wheel, and it actually goes across, as if you were swiping across a screen. That's, it almost feels that way, you know. It's like it's built to use with a hand as opposed to with a mouse, really.
I take it you get to determine what programs are displayed on this front interface. Like, I could remove stuff if I wanted, or add different things there.
Yeah, so I mean, I haven't done this before, but upon saying that, I clicked on one of these tiles, and if you click and drag,
oh yeah.
It kind of does the iPad thing, I guess, where you can reorder them.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
It's incredibly different, I think. This interface that we're looking at here is amazingly different from anything that you've previously seen on Windows before. And I wonder about how people will react to that. Because if you are a fairly hardened Windows user, just the simple changes like the Aero interface or the updates to Windows 7, the classic or the new updated access to the control panel, simple things like changing the software, unload and install software, etc., were big issues for Windows users, and those were only tiny little adjustments.
Yeah.
This is like a massive change. It's like, it almost looks like a completely different operating system altogether.
Now, I mean, just to make that link back to the past, I guess. The first button we'll click on here is the desktop tile. So that does bring you right back to Windows 7, essentially.
It just gets rid of all that other stuff, and you're confronted with like the things that you're used to, basically.
Yeah, so if we click on these, then there are some tweaks, don't get me wrong. But for the most part, this could be Windows 7.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously they're going to do some arty magic with this button at some point, I guess, as opposed to it just being a grey block. There are some changes to the Explorer. They've brought in their kind of ribbon interface on the top here.
That's a lot to get used to again. I just look at that and it makes me think of that Microsoft Office.
Yeah.
2010, and that made me cringe a bit. But again, that's purely to do with like how.
It's your original perceptions, your preconceived stuff, isn't it?
Yeah,
now,
exactly.
Now you can get rid of that, obviously.
Yeah.
You can minimise the ribbon and you're basically back to what you had before, I guess.
If you're a sissy who doesn't like change, you can push a button.
And for the most part, you're back to what you had before.
See, that's nice. That's nice. Best of both.
A little bit of kind of IE-ism in there.
Yeah.
Guess. Yeah. Like. But. So when you're on this kind of go back to the Metro page again, just because it's what they obviously intend the developer preview to be distributed for.
Mm.
I mean, they're not showing off the fact that it's still Windows 7 if you want it to be. They want people to play with this new interface and see what they can develop for it. So, I mean, let's take the Stocks app. That's pretty much the stock app you get with everything nowadays.
Well, so, that's just hopelessly wrong, isn't it? I mean, the arrow is pointing up. It's ridiculous. And it says plus 208 points. You know, they're out of the mind. This is fictional stocks, isn't it?
What are the stocks in, do they say?
Sure, this isn't fantasy football.
So, interestingly, it's too big to fit on my 1080p monitor. So, there's a horizontal scroll bar instead of vertical. It's a shame that you can't kind of click and drag, I guess, to move horizontally.
Yeah.
That's almost how I would expect to move.
That's one of my concerns with this this Metro interface, is that it's a needless, like we were saying last time, it's a bit of like a needless abstraction. Already it's starting to feel a little bit more awkward than it should. On a tablet, I'm sure this would work differently though, but...
Well, I guess on a tablet this would probably work the same, and that's the point almost.
I mean...
But you would interact with it differently.
It would feel less awkward, yeah. It would feel less cumbersome. I don't know for sure this is less cumbersome yet, but this is more cumbersome yet. But I'm just... these are just my like initial misgivings about such a, like another interface on top.
Yeah.
Which is essentially what we're looking at.
I think it's... I think it has got a certain... what's the word I'm looking for here? It's got a certain kind of user friendliness to it, a kind of intuitive nature to it. It looks, but it does look very much. It makes you want to touch it. I think you know, with it's got big buttons, big icons. You know, it's got this swipe idea, which is reminds me very much of Android. Of the Android, where you swipe your three different panels across, backwards and forwards, with all your different apps there, and it's obviously picking up on the app paradigm, and. I mean, it's almost like two completely separate products. Metro is like a completely separate product from Windows 7. They're so incredibly different. But I think that this could be the kind of thing that would be really friendly and useful to you when you are, you know, you just want to quickly open something up, find out what's going on with the stocks, maybe quickly read RSS, all that kind of stuff that they've tried, that like the WebTop OS. HP did the WebTop OS, and we've got SplashTop Linux distros that boot in a few seconds, give you this interface with kind of your email, your RSS, and your key apps. That looks like a job like that that's been done here, and it looks good. I think that would work really well.
It's just the mouse, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I was just going to finish that off and say, but I think that the mouse and keyboard paradigm is totally the wrong way to interact with that interface. And I suspect that many people will just simply switch Metro off, and they'll go to Windows 8 and just say, look, I'm not interested in Metro. It might work well on Windows phones or something like that, or tablet devices and so on and so forth.
I guess what this makes me think of watching something like CSI, when the guy comes in, touches the screen, because they've got some touchscreen PC, and he just goes, that's the one thing I want, swipe, That's the answer.
Yeah,
it does have that kind of swish and feel, doesn't it? If you have a touchscreen
PC, and there are plenty of those about now. HP have done a series of them, this, that, and the other. And I think for that kind of thing, it'd be great. Just bang, mash your fingers on the screen, flick, backwards and forwards. Awesome.
It looks a little bit like Movie OS, doesn't it? In the future, a Minority Report or something, and all this stuff's appearing on all this flat screen stuff. It's always big, stark stuff that's unnecessarily colourful, and all of the prompts saying access denied always come up like in big flashing things in the middle. All of this stuff that's coming up here is coming up in great big massive windows, and I've just in that moment actually I've come to like it a lot more because it's finally getting closer to the movie OS. You know, always watch stuff like this OS that they use in the movies. And it makes me laugh. It really does, because I look at it and I think, yeah, all these needless animation and things flying around. But now, they're starting to edge towards it. That sort of visual. I mean, this sort of thing will look lovely on a tablet.
Well, I think yes, it will. So now, let me just put my feet up here a minute and lay into this and give it a bit of a kick in. So, the first things to say are is that I mean, I'm looking at here at the RSS headlines that we're all looking at with the grey screen and the way that the styles and everything else. And this is, like, if you've got five steps to go from Windows to Apple Mac OS X, this is like gone to step two, directly straight for Mac OS. It's just, oh look, Mac OS are doing a great job. Let's go and look like them, and there are plenty of other operating systems doing the same thing out there. Microsoft continue to make the same mistake, right? They are investing significant research and development time to put this interface onto the top of the Windows 7 operating system. Mm. And I think that that is a mistake. Windows 7 has already reached the point where it's lost massive... there's this gap between backwards compatibility with lots of earlier software that won't run without using the XP emulator and so on and so forth.
Yep.
Why are they continuing to build on this old platform again? I mean, I'm not saying you shouldn't take Windows 7 forward and Windows 8. Microsoft has easily enough resources to take this paradigm, this model, and put its own new kernel underneath it, a complete new operating system infrastructure, deal with administrative issues, security issues, handle all of those problems, and then put this out as another kind of thread, almost a different kind of distribution of Windows altogether. By all means, enter this tablet market and compete in it, but don't do it off the back foot. It's a mistake to do that. What they should be doing is putting the best foot forward, getting some ARM material, getting the tablets, and saying, right, clean sheet of paper, guys, make something really good. They're not innovating enough, I'm sorry, but they're not. I don't think it's going to take them anywhere.
Yeah, they've got the resources, and they just need the balls to get the source code, control A, delete.
Absolutely.
So do you think this thing is not going to Windows 8 isn't going to fly so much?
I think it's not that it's not going to fly. That's not what I'm saying. I think the interface is great, and I think the way the look and feel is really good, and they're heading in the direction of Apple Macintosh. Strategically, I think that that's a very short-sighted view, because if you push towards making something look like Mac OS, when your customers compare this against Mac OS, they're still going back by Mac.
Mm.
Of course they will,
yeah.
Because, I'm sorry, but Mac beats this by a long, long way in the look and feel and the polish. That's not to say that this isn't very nicely polished.
Yeah, that was quite good what happened then.
no, what I'm saying is that you've got this kind of legacy code base that goes all the way back to Windows 3, built upon. You're at this point now where you are changing wholesale this whole interface. Metro could well be a completely different operating system like Android is, but instead of saying we want to do something like that as Microsoft and produce a system like Metro that we can give out to people, that maybe even it splash tops up and you boot into Metro or you boot into Windows 7, this would be a good strategy. But to put it on top of Windows 7 as an extension means that you're just starting with all of those key problems that are still sitting in your Windows core and then layering something else up on the top. You're just asking for another load of trouble.
It's as you say, it is short-sighted, isn't it? I mean, it's not going to be long before they can have to address like a lot of the same issues all over again. And they'll make their money in the meantime, but they are going to have to do a bunch more work. And they could have put some time into something that really lasts. And then once they've got that, they can really work on all this kind of stuff we're looking at here.
I think you really hit the nail on the head with that there, Rick. Personally, like one of the things you learn being in business is that actually it's best to focus. And I think it's best to focus separately on Windows 7 and this new, well, this new OS, let's be honest, than it is to try and merge them together in one massive mixing pot. And like you say, I think this interface would be absolutely brilliant if you could turn on your laptop PC, touchscreen PC, and within 3 seconds have this running. And if you want to, you click a button and it loads up Windows fully, and it takes another 20 seconds to get into Windows. But if this thing was just sitting on a flash ROM, turn it on, oh, that's quick, that would have massive value. And with these little lecture apps then, I'd be inclined to use them a lot more than just going, oh, get rid of this interface, I've got a mouse. So maybe that's in the pipe works. I doubt it, but maybe. Mm.
I would really like to see that. I mean, obviously, you know, don't get me wrong, nobody loves a good Microsoft bashing more than me. I absolutely love it and revel in it. But that doesn't mean that I would like to see what Microsoft wiped off the face of the planet. I mean, there are plenty of open source advocates that would happily do that and quite actively get themselves over to Washington to do it, but that's not what it's about. For me, it's about the diversity in the technology. If we've got Microsoft doing a really good job of producing something that is competing really well in the market space, and we've got Apple doing the same, and we've got the open source community doing the same, we get a really nice, exciting marketplace for people to play around in, for the consumer to choose. Competitiveness in the market space, gives us innovation, and that's what I want to see as a, you know, as a passionate kind of computer user and open sourcer. I want to see lots of innovation and lots of new ideas coming forward. But that means getting away sometimes and being a little bit brave, and sometimes looking at your code and saying, do you know what? Actually, it's better to just leave that over there and start with a clean sheet of paper.
Yes. You want to see them like taking a few risks rather than. I mean, there isn't, not even like they're not calculated risks, the things you're talking about. Calculated risks are not just trying to ape each other. I mean, this is like clearly just like this use of eye candy just strikes you as like a kind of transparent way of trying to win you over, rather than saying to you, okay, we're aware of this, and this. We've done away with all that, and we're aiming to actively fix that problem, these issues that you had. It's something that they rarely say, because it's like an admission of failure. It's saying that the ones that most of you are using is bad. So I guess I can understand why they don't say it. But it'd be nice. I mean, yeah, this is just like a little bit. It feels a little bit like distraction.
Yeah, no, I agree with that, and I think that. It very much comes across like that, as a kind of distraction. And I think that I'm trying to sort of visualise for a moment now how the marketplace is likely to react to this. Now, the key thing about it is that we must never forget that Microsoft has still got this massively dominant position with the PC OEM manufacturers. So if you manufacture a PC, you can't even these days ship the PC without an operating system. It's hard to do that, never mind an alternative operating system. Microsoft have sewn that market space up for a long time. So it means that the consumers are going to only have the Windows 8 choice. We've already seen that with Windows Vista and Windows 7, particularly where this matters most, which is in the commercial sector, because I think tablets and consoles and so on and so forth like that are going to overtake very rapidly. Smart TVs and things like that are going to overtake very rapidly the home user market space. So now we're talking about the commercial tool. And Microsoft is totally reliant on its licensing regimes, the fact that it kind of almost forces the hand of an organization. Once you're on board with Microsoft servers and Microsoft client access licenses and desktops and so on and so forth, it's very hard to get out of that paradigm and implement something else, even though there are plenty of tools there. I think the issue here is that at each iteration, we had Windows Vista, where they kind of forced that out onto the community, and it forced this change with DocX, and then people were getting frustrated because they couldn't open documents right.
Yeah.
Then you've got Windows 7, and of course, everybody's now getting PCs with those on, and you can't get back to the old stuff. And we found the consumer saying, no, absolutely not. You, PC World, you, Mr. PC Retailer, are going to give me Windows XP. I do not want this. I think that Microsoft are going to suffer the same problem again. They're going to come into the market space again. They're going to go, look at this now thing, this wonderful thing that we've done, and this, that, and the other. And, you know, is it what the consumer wants?
Yeah.
Is it, you know, is it what the, you know, your average functional desktop PC user wants? I don't think so. I think that they're not playing to their to the most lucrative market sector, which is, we know that they're losing market share already. They're losing market share to open source tools like Firefox and so on and so forth. They're starting slowly to lose market share to Mac sales. This move, I think, is going to see more of that. If you are now forced into a position where I have to start thinking about whether I buy a PC with Windows 8 on it, which looks like this, or Mac like that, you force your consumer to go back into the market and say, okay, what's available? What shall I buy? And then it's probably going to be a 50-50 split. Some will go Mac, some will this. What we'll see is a shrinking of Microsoft's marketplace. Mm. Strategically, I think that that's an error that they're making there. And I think that also, for the commercial users of this, it's really going to push the boundaries for them. They're going to come into the commercial world and saying, you've got 70 or 100 desktops with 5 or 6 or 7 Windows servers, and we want you to put all Windows 8 on it, and it's like this and it's like that. The IT guys are going to sit down and they're going to say, well, you know, what else is out there? And they're going to start looking at open source. Mm-hmm. They're going to start looking at the BSD stuff that's available, the Linux stuff that's available. And I think they're going to make choices with their feet. Mm-hmm. So whilst it looks very flash and it's got all this funky stuff, when you just think it through a little bit, you know, which, you know, I don't think it adds up.
I guess it all depends on what this new one can do, what it can do for you that the other ones couldn't. What gaps does it plug? What does it bring to the table? Rather than if it's the same old, then there's nothing really to recommend it apart from, as you say, them strangleholding you into it. But it may be that there's several features which actually do save a lot of time over the old one, where like they may have actually fixed a few things.
I mean,
cynicism makes me go the other way. But
I mean, like John was saying, a fast boot into Metro would be a cool idea.
Yes.
A really good thing to do. You know, I mean, there's lots of eye candy here. I mean, some of these things almost look like it's kind of coming from the Xbox development team.
Yeah.
Some of the whizzy graphical animation stuff and so on and so forth. And again, you know, it's kind of like, you know, well, if you're going to do that kind of stuff, maybe that should be better. Maybe push more into the Xbox media, entertainment, graphical goodness kind of things, push more of that into the home. You know, I think this blending is wrong.
Do we
know what do we know in terms of fundamental changes? You know, you installed this, John. What's the installer experience like?
It's very similar to Windows 7, really, in the sense that it's you know, it's the minimum you can have for an install process, I believe. So it's just the, in fact, I think, I'm trying to remember because it was installed a while ago, but I think it even looked a bit like the Windows 7 install up to the point where you start setting up the details on the computer.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, essentially, you know, you put the disk in, you pick your partition, you enter your name, you pick your time zone, that's it.
Well, that's simple, isn't it? I mean, I think most people don't usually install their OS on their PC unless they're reinstalling it later on.
Yeah.
And for most, I think for average, just kind of consumer computer users, they buy it with it on it and that's it, and away they go, and so on and so forth. But it sounds, I mean, it's been a long time since I've installed Windows 7 I think I might have done Vista, but XP is the thing I'm familiar with installing, and that installer is quite long-winded and you go through quite a lot of hoops. And whenever I compare that installation process against something like Fedora or something like that, I mean, it pales into insignificance. XP is just a dreadful experience, and you need to be relatively technical to do it. So it's nice to hear that they've really simplified that, you know, made that easier and more accessible for the user that wants to pop their disk in and reinstall again, and so on and so forth. That sounds like they've been a bit more innovative.
I'm pretty sure that anyone that has, say, buggered up their computer and needed to install it from scratch, obviously some people won't be able to manage it, but some people can't open Word, but someone that's competent at using their computer shouldn't have any problems just putting the disk in and saying, put it on my disk.
Mm.
You know, if they're not trying to do anything fancy with partitions or anything, it should just be a case of putting it in, hit the button, it says this will wipe everything. You go, yes, that's what I want to do. And then off you go. So
now the developer beta program that's available from Microsoft, that's it's open to anybody, isn't it?
Yeah, so anyone can download this and
download this and have a play with it. I mean, I think that, certainly for people that are listening to this show, that's definitely worthwhile doing. If you've got a PC or something that you can download this on, you should go and take a look at it and see what it does.
You can install it in VirtualBox, but I would err away from that. I'd fork out a 40 gig partition on your hard drive somewhere and put it on there.
I mean, you might find, just thinking about the VirtualBox issues that we had when we did that before, it may well be that going forward from here, updates to VirtualBox and the VirtualBox extensions, because basically for any OS you want to install, you can pull down the correct extensions to make it work, and there's probably something that will work in VirtualBox in the future, so don't be afraid to try it going forward. I mean, at the moment we had problems with it and couldn't get it to work.
Yeah, I mean, some of the, I guess there's kind of three main, well, a couple of main problems. One was just that a lot of the Metro apps just didn't do anything, and they wouldn't even load, would they? And I guess that's because of the, possibly something to do with the lack of GPU, trying to do the loading animation and things.
Yes, it probably is, which the VirtualBox VirtualBox extensions will fix that.
Yeah.
But the extensions need to be appropriate to the OS, and of course everything's a bit new. So.
But the other thing, I guess, is because typically when you're running something in VirtualBox, you run it in a window instead of full screen, especially because we couldn't get the guest editions to install, so we couldn't change the resolution, which means you kind of had to run it in a window, otherwise you'd, or put your monitor to a rubbish resolution. But the biggest problem that causes is that a lot of the interaction you're expected to do will involve you pushing your mouse to the side of the screen here, say. So you push it to the left and you can go left an application. Push it to the right and you can go right an application. And if you push your mouse into the bottom left corner, you get your start button.
Okay.
Now, obviously, that's fine when you're using a full screen app. But on VirtualBox, you have to find that one magic pixel.
Yeah.
Because your mouse isn't constrained to the window. So you have to find that one magic pixel in the corner to make the menu appear.
Yeah, which is a bit of a nightmare. So, well, I mean, I know we played about with that a little bit. I mean, the key to this is to get the VirtualBox updated, download the appropriate extensions, which comes like as an ISO, just for rep, for if you're listening to this, Control and D in VirtualBox will just give you the ability to load those extensions straight in. Once you've got that rigged, you may well have a little bit more fun with it than we did. One of the other questions that I have, which is something that seems to have been addressed really well by Apple, and the open source community were very much forced to do it, but pretty much nowadays, when you get a piece of hardware for Apple or Linux, you plug it into your box and it just works. The drivers are already there. Still today with Windows, there's usually a driver disk or some download or some this, that, and the other. Things don't just plug in and work. Do we know, has there been any mention of that? Is there anything to fix that? Are they going to get more drivers to make it kind of more plug and play?
I haven't heard anything to suggest that. I mean, I suspect they'll have the usual scenario. Windows will get a gigabyte bigger.
Yeah.
And that gigabyte will be full of all the things that came out while Windows 7 existed.
Yeah. Or they would have sung about it if they fixed that. That's the kind of thing they scream about, isn't it? It's like, just plug things in and then they work.
But you'd think that would, I mean, that's not going to be hard to do. If you think about, I mean, they're better placed, Microsoft, a better place to do it than the other guy. They're probably still a better place to do it than Apple for third party peripherals that go into the Apple Mac. You know, very often they just plug in your printers and stuff, just go. The same with Linux. Obviously, they've got Microsoft has the march on the OEM market. It would make sense for them to set up some kind of repository or something like that, and some updating mechanism that just where they go to the OEMs. If you're launching a new NVIDIA card, give us the driver. You plug the card in and Windows can just go and get it and install it. I mean, that would just make a load of sense, I think, to do that kind of thing. Because it would make the whole experience better. Plug things. Windows users would get really excited to plug a brand new video card in and everything just worked. It'd be like, way!
It's always surprised me, actually. Windows has never quite got that right. You plug in a bit of hardware and it says, oh, you haven't got this driver. would you like me to go and find it for you? And you go, ha-ha, yes, please.
Yeah,
sounds
not great.
Once have I ever clicked no. yes, and it's actually found it. Surely,
yeah.
You take the device ID, you compare it in a database, you find out what I've plugged in, you give me the file.
Otherwise, what was it doing?
Yeah.
Where does it go when it does that?
It's like it just looks on your computer. Oh, no, I don't have a driver for that. It's like, well, I knew that, because if you had a driver, it would have worked.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
And then it goes online and never, not once, no. I plug something in and it's gone, I've actually found a driver for you.
Yeah. Checking online for a solution is another of my favourites. No solution found, sorry.
But
I mean, they must have a bullshit department that's job is to sit there and think about these things and think, what's going to happen when we get, you know, when all of a sudden the paperclip shoots the little dog. What are we going to do there? I know what we'll do. We'll tell it we're going to go to the internet for a solution.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we'll just run a timer for 3 minutes and then we'll say, unfortunately, we were unable to find a solution. And I bet there are people who sit and brainstorm this around the table, come up with all of these things. You know, they need Mac jobs.
I've always imagined that they've got like a mechanism inside there, like a program that just has lots of like partial parts of phrases. And then just assembles them into a new error report each time, which is why I've never seen all of the error reports. It always gives me something new, and I thought, oh, I've not seen that one before. I mean, I started seeing one not so long ago, Dr. Watson post-mortem debugger. As what the hell
that's
is
been
that?
There for years. That was back in XP or even maybe before that day.
What the frig is Dr. Watson doing?
Yeah, Dr. Watson was in 98, it was, yeah. Mm.
What the hell's all that about? What does he want? What does he want with my computer?
Well, he's still trying to get out. he's still trying to get rid of progman.exe.
He encounters a lot of problems. I know that.
Let me out.
I think that I think that's the issue with all the legacy stuff, isn't it? You know, the kind of issue with it.
There's two more things I'd like to for us to have a quick chat about. I think before we wrap up on Windows 8. First of all, it's worth mentioning. They've got a store button here now where you'll presumably be able to purchase Metro and regular apps.
Mm, okay.
Obviously, if we click on it, they haven't launched it yet, so you can't play with that yet. But I just thought it was interesting that they're jumping on the App Store bandwagon.
Yeah. It's just everybody's doing it, aren't they? I mean, like, if you on your home consoles all have, like, a section that you just go straight to. It says, here's the latest things you can buy. It's just kind of like a bit more direct than other forms of advertising, but without any of the selling. It's just a little more honest, if anything. I can't say as I mind it.
I'm all for it, actually. I think that they haven't got any choice. They have to get onto that bandwagon for the simple fact that everybody else is doing it. You know, there's plenty of Linux distributions that have got stores built into them now. You know, obviously Chrome and Jolly Cloud and things like that, they've all got app stores built into them. Mac, Android, if Windows don't do that, they will, they're just making their consumer jump through hoops. And again, that's just ludicrous.
Yeah.
Be interesting to see how they're kind of going to integrate that with the developer base and try to, you know, I mean, obviously it's a very meticulous process with Apple, setting, you know, subscribing to be an Apple developer and releasing your apps and everything else. It's a very controlled process. It's a much looser with Android market space or the Ubuntu market space. It's a much looser kind of thing. Whereas on Windows, you know, it's very much relied upon almost this kind of anywhere on the internet freelance kind of. Buy software of any kind of difference. It's a very kind of diverse market space.
Yeah, I mean, part of me hopes they don't just become like Apple in most ways, because then there's no real distinction between the two, and that's part of like the this competitive thing you're talking about that you have to have in place. Otherwise, there's nothing. When there's nothing to distinguish between the two, it's just the icon on the front of your box. That's the only thing keeping you apart. I mean, I think it's fun to have that sort of diversity, if nothing else.
Totally agree with that, Jack. Yeah,
but more and above that, you need this differentiation between the two, like, not just in the look, in the feel, but in the very way that you do business, just to provide an alternative. You can't go wrong with alternatives. You need them.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. That's spot on.
It's not like there's many big ones to pick from.
No, I agree.
When you got about, like, you got about three choices, haven't you?
Well, yeah, broadly speaking, you have. I mean, well, to be fair, I would obviously say three choices, and I'd say that we're equal these days. You know, Windows, Apple, and Linux, dominated largely by Ubuntu as kind of choices. There are obviously more obscure choices out there. You've got things like Net and FreeBSD, but they're more difficult and more kind of subterranean to get hold of, and things like Solaris and stuff like that, which, you know, people are a bit more sort of specialised and kind of, you know,
Morlocks using this stuff.
But to the market space, you know, it's, I think to the average Joe working the street, he sees a 90% Windows market and a 10% Apple market. That's probably what he sees for PCs. Different for phones and things like that, different for that, but that's what they're looking at, to the average Joe. And so this is a big advantage for Microsoft that they have. Obviously Apple want a piece of that, Linux and open source, we want a piece of that market space too. So, you know, which is great. I mean, if Microsoft continued to I think at the moment this is a mess. And if they keep it like that, it'll be a great opportunity that Ubuntu, a company like Canonical, will be able to really capitalise on that. You know, I mean, they've just released 11.10 on Eric Ocelot, and that's got loads of flashy candy in it. And we should look at that in a show, definitely. But
this is identity crisis right now, isn't it?
Yeah, that is absolutely spot on. In fact, I'd like to propose that for the title of this Microsoft Windows 8 Identity Crisis. I think that's absolutely bang on.
But at the same time, I mean, just in their defence, it is a developer preview. So no one really knows how they intend to wrap this up and present it. And I suspect that even the guys at Microsoft don't really know how they're going to present the end product yet. That's why they've given it out to us so far in advance and said, come on, developers, what do you think?
Sure.
So maybe, you know, they're actually forking for ideas like putting it as a quick boot option.
Mm. Also, in their defence, I think this Metro stuff looks great.
Yeah, it's just...
I'm coming to like it more and more. I mean, in itself, as a thing, I'm looking at it and it just it really does remind me of the movies. I can just see this coming up on shop windows and stuff like that. It looks good.
There's some interesting use cases where I can imagine it being really good. So in your living room, if you've got a media PC, this is spot on, because it's kind of like an Xbox interface, but without having to have an Xbox, because you might have a media PC. If you've got a touchscreen, I can see this being brilliant. You know, you come into the office in the morning and the first thing you want to do is just check all your regular gubbins. And obviously here on the start menu, these tiles kind of have the basic information on them anyway, so presumably you could have a tile down here with your new emails on, so it's kind of a bit widgetized. You go, there's three emails, I'll do those, tap the screen, bring them up, and then check everything. But then when it comes down to writing a Word document, you wouldn't want to do it in this.
Yeah, it's being part of your desktop experience that it's a strange fit. Because you came to buy like a PC running Windows, and you've got this thing sort of like on the side of it that you would expect to find on a tablet.
It's just this keyboard and mouse with this interface. That's my issue. And obviously I have a keyboard and mouse. That's what I'm used to using. But I think the last thing that's worth chatting about, and this is probably, let's kind of save the biggest topic till last. And obviously the one thing that we do probably 90% of the time now on our computers is browse the internet. So it would be remiss of us not to have a look at the early build of IE10.
I was going to say, were you able to install Firefox on it then?
Now IE10 can actually be run in two modes. So you've got your Metro view and your desktop view.
Fully broken and not so broken.
Completely bust in half and gently limping along.
So, I think it's probably best if we have a look at it in the Metro view first. Now, this is how I would kind of envision you using it if you were doing it with a touch screen, or maybe even it's full screen browsing. Now, just to explain to our listeners, the view kind of So by default, the screen is completely empty, and all you see is the web page you're looking at. Now, when you interact with certain elements, a bar, probably about an inch big at the bottom of the screen, slightly bigger perhaps, pops up and then acts as your kind of browser bar. So it has the URL bar and a few buttons around it with kind of white icons in white circles. So very Android-y as a browser experience.
It reminded me actually of the PlayStation 3's web browsing experience as well.
Yeah.
I've only seen that once at a neighbour's house, so you guys might have seen it better than I. But when I was, as soon as it came up, I thought, this reminds me of something. Where have I seen that interface before? And then as I thought back, I thought, ah, yeah, I remember seeing something like that on the PlayStation 3.
Yeah.
Very simple, and I struggled with it, to be honest with you, to try to use it. But
I struggle a lot more these days. They've, on a side note, they've not updated it in quite a while, and most of the stuff I try and look at doesn't work properly with it.
Right.
They've not struggled to keep up with it, but that's not something that's going to happen here. I sounded really sarcastic, and I didn't didn't really mean it.
I mean, there are. I mean, just looking there, there's quite a lot of differences there. When you looked at the control panel, for example, in the Metro interface, that was just like big writing and completely and utterly alien from anything that I've seen before. And I remember the Windows 95. Control panel, and then the iterations on it and on it and on it, and it's just so incredibly different now.
I think this control panel is one of its nicer Metro examples that comes with it.
I've got to get used to that. I mean, it's just a matter of them moving everything around again. So it's just
Like the iPhone, iPad settings page, really, doesn't it? You've got all your options down the left, and then you've got your sub-option on the right. But actually, for the control panel, I think this works better than the big list of icons, not really knowing which one you want, because they're poorly labelled.
It is very trendy looking. This OS will make you look cool.
But I think there's a whole bunch of opportunities here that kind of present themselves if this is done right. I think that the direction that it's going at the moment is wrong in terms of the PC idea, for all the reasons I said before. But I can just imagine, like, you know, going down to the shop and buying a Samsung Smart TV with that installed on it.
And
I just click my remote and bosh, up comes Metro. And then, you know, maybe with my remote controller, it's a bit like a Wii remote, and I can just point and flick and I can pull me the news in and fire up YouTube. And that kind of stuff would be really cool. And, you know, I could see the Metro interface working really well in those kind of settings. You know, maybe just being, if Microsoft just was being a bit different and sort of said to itself, okay, you know what, how can we abstract away from the PC market and look at other markets? Well, smart TVs might be a really good opportunity to go and look at that kind of stuff. Obviously, tablets and so on and so forth, you know, maybe getting hock with, well, they're already very tightly fixed in with Nokia now, with their mobile platforms. You know, maybe do some joint development with Metro on some Nokia tablet devices and so on and so forth. You know, there's plenty of opportunities out there to really kind of expand into the market space. I think it just needs to be done separately. And of course, you know, the final word I would say is that I'd really like to see the idea of Metro built on a splashtop Linux or something that just... I mean, the reason why I say that is because it's not going to take any research and development at all from the Microsoft team. You know, a few days, it's Mr. Barmer, if you're struggling with it, send me an email, I'll fix it up here. A few days, and you know, that they've got the source code, that could be compiled up and running, and that, I think, would work.
So, just pulling it back a little bit, back to the browser experience. Obviously, this kind of full-screen browsing.
I like to see iSAM full screen. That looks really good. I like that. I could work on a Samsung TV, my thingy, doing different stuff.
Because I think this is actually quite nice. Full screen browsing. I'm quite digging the full screen browser experience.
I love full screen browsing.
But I can never be bothered to fire it up.
That's it. Because you want to get all your buttons back at a moment's notice, don't you?
Now, they've introduced in this Metro interface, quite a lot of the bringing up the menu is done with the right click. And that actually works quite well. So by default, you've got this full screen browsing experience. And when you go, I want to do something, you just right click. Your tabs appear up here, and then your URL bar down here. But it all goes away.
What happens if you try and right click on links then, if you want to like save link as and things like that? Oh, you can still do that.
So if you right click on a link, then that takes precedent.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And then you can open the link in a new page.
Right.
And then when you right click, all your tabs, well, pages as they call them, are open at the top. I do like that. It'd be nice to actually browse full screen for a change without having to push F11.
Sure,
and then every 3 minutes push it again because I want to do something and push it again.
Yeah, that's a good evolution, yeah.
So I quite like that. Jumping on the OS X Lion bandwagon, isn't it, with the full screen? But
I guess we could think of it more as copying a good idea.
Well, I think they copied it from Ubuntu myself. And of course in Ubuntu you only need to just hit the meta key and then up come you can jump between whatever applications you like. But having said that, I do like that. I was quite admiring that, the way that the window kind of slides from the top and bottom, doesn't it? Just sort of comes up, like almost makes like the switch between wide angle and full screen in a movie. Just, tum, up it comes, and there's your bits and pieces all nicely laid out. I mean, that's got some really nice usability ideas going on there. I won't deny that for a moment.
And then obviously you can use the desktop view if you want to go back to the traditional.
Nah.
And I don't think there's all that much needs to be said about that. That's kind of as we remember it. All the text is massive. Oh, that's because it's zoomed in. There we go, 100%.
Yeah.
That's much better. I don't know if it defaulted to 140%. I might have just accidentally clicked something. But I don't know, mixed bag of feelings at the moment, actually. It's more positive than I thought it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I was going to come in thinking, Metro, they're trying to revive the widgets idea, which failed miserably with Vista.
Mm.
My biggest problem is using a mouse and keyboard and forcing me to use the Metro interface.
Mm.
Now, if they had it as the fast boot option, I think that would be brilliant. You know, if I just want to watch a movie, browse the internet, or do some of the core things on my device, then all I have to do is wait 2-3 seconds for my machine to turn on, and I can do all that, and then when I want to play a game, all right, I'll bite the bullet, I'll go through the 20-second boot process.
Mm.
That would be pretty cool.
Mm.
But I don't want to have to fight through Metro just to get back to my regular interface every time I turn my machine on.
Yeah.
That's my current thoughts.
You don't want it to be a layer between you and your machine, another layer.
Mm. What are your final thoughts, Jack?
My final I've always thought to myself that if Windows never broke, then I'd think it was a very good operating system because it did everything I needed it to and I knew where everything was. That's really my only gripe against Windows is when it doesn't do what it's supposed to be doing, is when it breaks or rots or whatever. If this new Windows 8 can work perfectly, then it's just a matter of me learning where all the buttons are all over again, and I can live with that. I mean, and I quite like Metro. I think once they find their feet with it, I mean, Rick was talking about all these smart TVs and all these other devices. I think they've probably got all of that in mind, and they'd like a piece of all of that. But this is just them sort of like just putting it out there, just to get some initial feedback, because it's like the most widespread user base that they can think of to push it out at the moment. And I suspect they've got their eye on all sorts of devices that they'd like to start chucking this thing onto. The upshot of what I'm saying is I think it'll get a lot better, a lot more tailored to each platform once they've got a bit of feedback on it. I think it's going to be better than it looks now, but it will have this, like I say, this rotting problem, breaking thing that Windows always seems to do. My main and only gripe with Windows, to be honest, I don't think it'll really address any of that, because underneath it is running the same sort of stuff. So yeah, I like what they've done with it. Once they get to sort that out, the identity thing going on, then all we'll be left with is the bugs.
Well, I think my final word on it is much more to do with the marketplace, really. And the way that I see that, is that I think that Windows Metro has got a lot of legs, and I think that it stands the chance to compete well in the market space with tablets and with what iOS and Android are doing, and in that market space and the smart TVs, all of those things, I think that's great. I think that if Microsoft is relying or hoping to continue its march forward and continue to base its revenues off its legacy users, I think it's going to be sorely disappointed. Mm. We already know that the greatest majority of consumers do not want to move from XP. They don't want to buy Vista or Windows 7. They've been forced to, and very often in cases they've gone back to it. They are certainly not going to wear this. And if you force them to do that, they will go in droves to Mac and put Mac suites in back in their offices and pay. Those that can afford to, when they look at the cost of CALs, hardware, software, everything else that you've got to pay for on the Microsoft platform, and you look at that interface and go, I've got to go through all of the transitional change to get that in and all the cost, and then I weigh that up against Mac, it's a no-brainer. Yeah. They're going to go and buy Mac. The other direction that it's going to push customers away, legacy customers from Microsoft, is those people that can't afford to go Mac, don't want to find themselves pushed, will go open source, and they will move in that direction as well. So I think that Microsoft is going to have to be reliant on these new market spaces, because the people that use Windows today, if you're a happy Windows Vista or XP user, I don't think you're going to wear this. I really don't.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I think that wraps up nicely our Windows 8 preview discussion. I suspect maybe in 6 months' time we'll have another opportunity to play with another one. But, that leaves us to just say I hope you enjoyed the new show format.
Yeah.
And don't forget to get in touch with us.
Absolutely. So you can email us, show@random.org, or alternatively, get in touch with us on Twitter, Jack. What's the Twitter handle?
Is it at random podcast?
It is, mate. Yeah. Awesome. Absolutely. Cool. Okay, right. Well, we hope you enjoyed the show. I have been Rick Timmis, signing off. Cheerio.
I'm Jackson Matthews, reminding you that when God closes a door, he releases a windows.
And I am John Wordsworth, and we'll be leaving you this evening with another track from Magna Tune, Soma Drone, WNQD.
At random.